Coming up on the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh is back. He joins me to recap another disappointing Nets loss, this time to the Indiana Pacers. We vent, we share, all that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back into the Locked On Nets podcast. Your host here is a very disappointed Josh Bass, who's trying to keep an outlook on the positive things in life. But Marcus Barahal is joining me to discuss a couple of recent losses by the Brooklyn Nets. The team now sits at 1-3 after a beatdown by the Indiana Pacers tonight. Pacers finished the game with a 118-108 win behind a very strong second half, despite losing Miles Turner early on in the game. Marcus, you miss me? You potted solo without me while I was gone in Florida for a few days?
Yes, I did miss you, and I did pod solo, Josh. It's good to have you back. I wish the Nets knew you were coming back. Maybe they would have been more motivated, because they looked pretty flat in this game.
Flat like a Diet Coke that's been sitting out there for too long. Do you think they were just saying, oh, like, Josh gets back on Thursday, so we just needed to kick it into high gear for the Houston game? Is that what the problem was?
That could be, and I hope that's the case, because there's really no other excuse. I think it had to have been this.
It was, yeah. I mean, it was rough to watch that second half tonight, and I was so, and to kind of give you insight into the last couple days, I've been at a work event basically from Saturday through Tuesday. I was sitting at a dinner with a lot of people at the company that are a lot more important than me when I found out that Jay Crowder hit a buzzer-beating shot. So I've been taking a few L's these last couple days, as the Nets have as well. But let's kind of get right into it, and we could talk about the whole Kyrie Irving thing and the report from Jackie McMullen, and kind of that some of the Nets officials are feeling a bit kind of perplexed and not feeling great about kind of Kyrie's antics. But really, he's the thing that's the only good thing about this team right now. How much are you panicking about this Nets 1-3 start? Because I think there are a lot of red flags in addition to just the record being poor.
Right. I think I'm concerned, but I'm not overly panicking. It's hard to remember, but we kind of expected this when the team went on that preseason trip to China. Not to say that that's like completely to blame for all of this, but like, other teams are struggling that went on those overseas trips. Like, the Pacers coming into this were not playing well, and the Kings haven't been playing well. But like Kenny Atkinson said in his press conference, the Pacers look pretty good tonight. So that's not entirely to blame, but I think that it's possible that piled up with two overtime games, piled up with that Knicks game coming right down to the wire. Like, there's been a lot of intense minutes for these guys early on. That being said, they did just have like multiple days off in a row, so you would expect them to come out crisper. It just seems like they don't have a ton of motivation. And going into this opening stretch of four games, it was four very winnable games. It was against Minnesota, which you would think is a win because that shouldn't have been a playoff team, we didn't think, coming into the season. The Knicks, obviously, they did win that game, but barely. The Memphis game, Memphis isn't a playoff team. And this Indiana team was already missing Oladipo and then lost Miles Turner in the first quarter. So you would think that the Nets would have the advantage in all four of those games, and instead they're 1-3. Hopefully this game against Houston that you mentioned is high enough stakes, there's big enough stars on the other side, that everyone kind of comes locked in, ready to play the whole time. But just between the sloppiness with the turnovers, the poor execution on free throws, which have both been a theme since the first game of the season, the Nets just don't look locked in at all.
Yeah, they don't look locked in. I mean, we're the Locked On Podcast Network, but they're not locked in, you know? And I completely agree with what you're saying, because when the schedule first came out and we were taking a look at it, I think you and I were both hyped, saying, oh, first four games look pretty easy. It's a nice chance for them to get off to a 3-1 start, or maybe even 4-0 if things break really well, just because none of the teams they're playing are that good. You know, Kyrie Irving on a new team is going to come out shot out of a cannon, and he has, but you know, no one else has stepped up. And I think the reason I'm a bit more concerned, well, one, I'm just a very reactionary fan in general, but a lot of kind of the things I was concerned about are really playing out in these first four games. So what is that saying? It's one, Jared Allen's not consistent. Caris LeVert is flashy and has a good handle, but he still struggles with turnovers. And he's not a good shooter from any level of the court. He struggles missing a lot of easy looks. You have guys like Temple and Nwaba that may provide some energy on defense, but can they carry the offense enough? You have a guy like Dinwiddie, who it's been a problem dating back to the last couple of years, where he just kind of looks for fouls constantly, gets mad at the refs, loses concentration, and then he's just taking wild shots and gets caught out of the game. DeAndre Jordan can get a lot of rebounds, but is he really affecting the game in a positive manner, or is his kind of just lack of intensity on defense just making things too difficult for the rest of the Nets? So these warning signs are still here, and they're going to need someone, whether it be a guy who's kind of a lower-tier role player to take a leap into a guy that can impact some games and provide some energy, or maybe one of their kind of 2 through 5 guys taking a step up and playing kind of at a near all-star level. But they just need something right now, because there's just so many flawed players on this team. A guy like Torian Prince, who can really shoot the hell out of the ball. But, you know, Hawks fans are right. He doesn't really impact the game anywhere besides his shooting, and his defense leaves a lot to be desired. And, you know, there's really only one thing right now that's really going to be the panacea to the roster, and that's a guy named Kevin Durant coming back. And I think Kenny Atkinson can do a good job in cobbling things together, but I just don't see right now with the horses the Nets have that they can be kind of a 45-46 win team. I think the best they could do is probably 40-42.
Right, and you mentioned Prince. I feel like his defense has had moments. Like, there's definitely been times in the post where he's defended better than I expected, but you saw it in this Pacers game. Sabonis just kind of ate him alive, and I didn't blame Kenny for trying that lineup with Prince at the five, because whenever Allen or DeAndre Jordan was out there on Sabonis, it felt like they just kind of let him shoot from the outside, and that was the case.
Or he ate him up inside. I mean, he was just bullying Jared Allen probably 3 possessions in a row, just like going at him on the inside also.
Yeah, for sure. And that was the case in that Memphis game also, where they let Jonas Valanciunas, who, granted, he's not a great shooter, but they were just completely leaving him wide open, like not even fake contesting. And like, these are still NBA players. These are still guys who, if they're willing to take that shot in a game, it's probably because they make a pretty high percentage in practice, and they're going to hit a couple here and there. And I think that this strategy that the Nets have in terms of defending bigs, where they drop way back, It's a little bit antiquated, and I know DeAndre like had a lot of success with it when he was with the Clippers, but I think it was a different league back then, and big men didn't have the kind of touch that they did. And granted, it could just be a flaw, or not a flaw, an outlier, that they've played Karl Anthony Towns, that they've played Jaren Jackson Jr. and Domantas Sabonis, 3 guys who are bigger but can stretch the floor. Like in this Houston game, they're not going to face that problem because Clint Capella isn't going to do that, but it still seems like a very noticeable hole that they don't have someone who can defend like a skilled big man, basically. And at the same time, they've struggled defending guards too. Malcolm Brogdon went off in this game. Ja Morant had a lot of success in the fourth quarter and overtime of that Memphis game. And I don't know, maybe it means David Nwaba needs to play more. Maybe it means that they need to try to make a trade or find some kind of defensive answer at the five for that type of player. Or do you think that that's just like that type of player isn't as common as it has appeared to be in these first couple of games?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like those types of players are definitely out there, but I don't think that's necessarily the biggest flaw with the Nets right now. I think a lot of it comes down to that their perimeter defense is terrible also, because you just don't have – you have guys like Nwaba and Temple that can compete. And I was going at this with – not going at this, but kind of having a conversation with David Wurzburger, a former host of this podcast on Twitter tonight, basically saying the guys on the Nets that can play defense and make things happen, they're just huge drop-offs on the offensive end, because the Nets are turning the ball over like crazy, and they don't have anyone that can really force turnovers consistently that's playing. The Pacers turned the ball over 9 times tonight, and that 9 times is when you have – I mean, they definitely have a lot of guys that take care of the ball, but also they were playing a very inexperienced rookie point guard in Aaron Holiday. Or maybe, what is he, second-year guy or rookie, I forget. But he played 16 minutes, and they just have no one that can really like get into these guys, force turnovers, make things happen. Rhodey Kuritz is the closest thing to that, but he's kind of seems like he's not playing that much. So I just feel like they need a bit more athleticism and intensity on the wing, as opposed to even though that the bigs right now aren't helping things, they're not probably the biggest problem.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. It's just that's like what's jumped out to me, where I think that a lot of their issues on the offensive end are more fixable, where it's like turnovers, it's missed free throws, it's kind of just sloppiness that I think you can tighten up with effort, you can tighten up with just like repetition and like getting more comfortable playing with guys. But on the defensive end, like you said, that's where the biggest problems are, both on the interior and on the perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like, I mean, the amount of turnovers, miscommunication turnovers the Nets had today was inexcusable. There was like at least six or seven of them where they just like threw the ball to a guy that they thought was spotting up and ended up being cutting, miscommunication on dribble handoffs. It's just amateur hour out there. And when you have guys, three guys that handle the ball very well, including an absolute wizard in Kyrie Irving. I mean, it wasn't really his fault tonight. He didn't really do anything real consequence on that end. But it was more so Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert just botching play after play. I mean, that can't happen if you're going to be considered to be a good to kind of above average good player in this league. Like that, those were just kind of rookie mistakes that can't be happening when you're trying to make the playoffs and be a team that people take seriously.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the Nets came into this game 27th in the league in turnovers with 19.7 a game, and they had 19 more in this game. So that's kind of where they've been these first few games. And I agree that it's a lot on Dinwiddie and on LeVert in terms of the sloppiness, because we've seen Dinwiddie trying to make flashy plays, like plays that seem a little bit out of character, frankly. And with LeVert, it feels almost like he's pressing a little bit, and there is a lot of pressure on him. When Kyrie Irving leaves the floor, the offense has completely stagnated, and it's been on one of those two guys, usually one at a time, to try to figure something out. So I would kind of like to see them see Kenny experiment more with playing Dinwiddie and LeVert more together and having Kyrie more so with those bench guys to kind of anchor them. I think that might help a little bit with the flow and kind of keep a similar lineup to what they had last year with Dinwiddie and with LeVert, Joe Harris, like those guys all out there together, and then use Kyrie's scoring ability to kind of anchor the bench and maybe play him with more defensive-minded guys like Nwaba. But yeah, like you said, it's laziness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's just something that's not clicking right now, and I think Dinwiddie can do it by himself. I think Kyrie can do it by himself. LeVert is really, he's just not consistent enough as a scorer right now. And obviously, I think he's a better all-around player than Dinwiddie, because I love Spencer, but he definitely takes a lot off the table as well. But LeVert just, I mean, there's so many plays where he makes it just a brilliant move and then has a 10-cent finish because he just botches so many easy shots. It's happened every year he's been in the league, and that's what's really holding him up from being an efficient scorer, because he's been a pretty inefficient scorer his whole time in the league. And, you know, the way the Nets are going right now, they're playing Houston on Friday, and I think I'm going to have to take Houston money line. And if I'm placing a bet on this game, you know I'm going to my bookie. It is the best time of the year, even though I'm complaining. Basketball is back. We have sweater weather, leaves on the ground, threes from downtown, a lot of Kyrie Irving threes. But if you're into sports gambling, the place to go has to be my bookie. You're going to bet a little. You're going to hopefully win a lot. Try a parlay if that's the case. NCAA is coming back in action soon. Cassius Winston returning for his senior year, trying to get a championship to Michigan State. And if you really want to support the Nets and every team in the NBA, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. If you join right now, mybookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Sounds pretty good to me. So, Marcus, when we take a look at the rotation, I mean, I think we're both thinking it makes sense to reconstruct some things. I think Kuritz probably needs to get more minutes. You know, we have Jana Musa, who's just kind of sitting on the bench, where he's wearing his Indochino, the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. And if you want to look like Jana Musa, I think we all do, you can start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering code Locked On at checkout. But is Musa a guy they should try to give a shot to, maybe if they want to jumpstart more scoring on the bench, and then they can play some of the more defensive minded guys with the starters? Like, how are you thinking about things? Because I feel like they don't have a lot of two way players, and that's really the problem for the Nets right now, and they had a bunch last year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even really thought about Musa. I think that that would make sense. I think trying to get more just scorers out there when Kyrie Irving's not on the floor is probably the best way to go in terms of anchoring that bench unit. But I still think that on the defensive side, that's where they've been lacking. That's where they've struggled all season long. And they're playing the Rockets on Friday. The Rockets just put up 159 points against the Wizards, James Harden with 59 of them. So they're going to need to get stops, and it's going to be tough to outscore that team. So I think that that's where things really need to like come to a head. Do you think Jared Allen needs to be starting again? Do you think that that's even like a problem at this point? I feel like him and DeAndre are kind of even in my mind. And then like, I don't really know what tweaks the Nets can make in terms of their perimeter defense. David Nwaba only played 10 minutes. You and I both like him. I think playing Musa with a more defensive-minded player like Nwaba or even Garrett Temple can be okay on that end. Pairing like an offense with a defense guy could be a way to get that two-way equivalent where maybe you're able to hide either guy on the other end, but it's just tough right now. There aren't a lot of defensive options for the Nets on the perimeter right now.
Yeah. No, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. It's just like Kenny doesn't have the horses to go with. I think I've liked Nwaba a lot better than Temple this season. I just like what Nwaba can bring to the table, even though he's not a perfect player by any stretch of the imagination. I would see maybe shorten the rotation, go a game without Temple, give Nwaba kind of low 20s in minutes. I think the first three games, especially, Kurtz definitely needs to play a lot more. He was awesome in that Knicks game, making a lot of things happen, hitting his threes. And that's kind of the spark plug that the Nets need. He's a guy that they thrived off of last year. So I would try him more, especially because he's their biggest wing that they have, which is kind of sad, but he really is right now. So he can hopefully kind of be more of a deterrent on defense and get on the board for some offensive rebounds a little bit, just kind of make some energy plays. So I maybe shorten the rotation from 10 and 9, see how it works out. Houston doesn't necessarily have to be the team that you try that against, but I think that's kind of an interesting bet that they could take. It's just tough for the Nets because right now on the center front, as you mentioned, I don't think it really matters if DeAndre Jordan starts or Jared Allen starts. They're both just so average to me right now. I'm really missing Ed Davis because you could even argue last season that there were many games that he was better and definitely more consistent than Jared Allen. I think the Nets are really missing his presence on defense where he's not the highest leaper, the best shot blocker, but he's one, an excellent defensive rebounder. So is DeAndre Jordan, sure. But he's an amazing positioner. He's very good at contesting shots, even if he's not blocking it, getting out on shooters, hedging high on screens. He really is kind of a phenomenal all-around defensive player. Not flashy, but really gets the job done and can cover for a lot of other people's mistakes.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think DeAndre at this point is maybe better on offense than he is on defense, which is saying something considering where he was like in his prime. But yeah, I like your idea of bringing or giving Kurucs more minutes. I think that he looked like he kind of lacked confidence in the first game and the first half of that Knicks game, but then once he started hitting shots, it seemed like things were clicking for him. But then again, he only took two shots in this Pacer game in 20 minutes, so
I do want to see. He did have that monster dunk.
No, yeah, he just needs to have more energy and effort, I think. And like you said, they need a spark off the bench, and I think he is like a great candidate to give them that. So I do like playing him more. I like playing Nwaba more. I think I would agree with those two moves.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm just taking a look at who else the Nets have, and like they're just getting killed. But I mean, they got killed tonight by Jeremy Lamb, who I feel like is always a Nets killer. Last year he ate them alive in Charlotte, but he's a decent player, but he's not a special player. But they just didn't have any option to stop him, really. And I feel like Nwaba would have been the one guy that would be able to do that because LeVert is, I think, better always defending point guards than he is against true wings. Dinwiddie kind of loses concentration. Kyrie's not going to be able to do it as well. And then Torian Prince, probably unlikely to do it, but also you need him to defend the bigger players just given kind of the lack of size the Nets have right now. So I would try a guy like Nwaba and see if he can at least be something on the defensive end.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned LeVert, too, who I think we both think has good potential on the defensive end. But we talked about it earlier. They're kind of really relying on him in terms of anchoring the second unit, in terms of doing a lot of the ball handling. So there's a lot of pressure and stress on him on the offensive end. So to give him that kind of burden on the defensive end is only going to make him less efficient than he already is shooting the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, exactly. He's already pretty inefficient, so you don't want him cratering even further. Marcus, what about the Grizzlies game? Obviously, a lot of hubbub over the excellent game that Ja Morant had and some of Jonas Valanciunas' threes, and obviously capping it off with Jay Crowder's heroics. But any positive things that we can take away from that game, at least?
Well, just first to touch on Ja Morant, yeah, he looked incredible. And, like, seeing him and RJ Barrett back-to-back really just makes me wish that Zion had been healthy to start the year, because this was a really strong draft at the top, and hopefully all three of these guys are, like, just around for a while. What was that?
And Dumbuya at number 15.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Sekou. How could I forget? But a positive thing to take away, I don't know. I mean, Kyrie looked incredible, like he has in every game. LeVert was solid. There honestly wasn't a ton. And I wrote this down during the game, but like it felt like the Nets couldn't pull away. And that's kind of been a theme, or it was a theme in the first three games, where they were clearly the better team. Like, I think against this Indiana team, you could maybe say it was like pretty even. But I think in those first three games, they were like inarguably the more talented team, and it seemed like they would get up by like four or five, and then they just kind of would give it right back, and neither team was able to build much of a lead. The Nets eventually got ahead, and then Morant just went crazy. But yeah, it's just kind of, it's the same, like, they don't seem to be able to, like, put their foot on the pedal and, like, really have that energy. The one game they had that in was that Knicks game, and I think part of that was just because the crowd was so intense in that game.
Yeah, no, I mean, they came out hot in that next game, and that was like very fun. But I think, yeah, they haven't really had a big lead. I mean, they were like, they got down by a lot. I mean, that Timberwolves game, they just got crushed at the start, and they've had some nice 8 to 10 point leads against the Knicks a little bit more. I think it was up to 15 or so. But they just keep letting people crawl back in, and maybe it's too much ISO ball, and eventually that's going to run out. But you know, Kyrie Irving, the guy is so much even better than I could have even imagined to start the season. Like, he is just a wizard with the ball. So fun to watch. Incredible with his bank shot and kind of mastering angles, throwing the ball off the rim. And, like, to see the Nets get off to this kind of start with Kyrie being even better than anticipated, it just really shows that the roster is not up to snuff right now, given kind of obviously everything going on with Kevin Durant, and then the DeAndre Jordan signing, which took away a lot of their capital to make future moves. So, and I think Kenny Atkinson is a really solid coach, and he's obviously excellent on the development side. But in his years as Nets coach, the one thing I've wondered with him is how good is he as an in-game coach, and that's not something he's ever proved to me, that he's anything more than an average coach at that point. And there's some times where he's looked kind of not clueless, but he hasn't had the correct feel for the game. So can he elevate himself and basically say, I'm taking a team that's at a dearth of top-end talent besides Kyrie, and basically say, I'm going to scheme my way to getting these guys to a 5 or 6 seed in the East? I'm just not sure if we know enough to answer that question right now.
Yeah, I think he's like a pretty average coach, and I'm like of the camp, I've heard this on like podcasts before, that I think that there's like maybe 4 to 5 coaches who like really make a positive impact, and then the same in terms of a negative impact. I think for the most part, in the NBA especially, it's like the players kind of dictate things. It's like a very free-flowing game. It's not like the NFL where a coach is like calling every single play on the sideline. Like, a lot of these things, it comes down to the players. And I get that, like, the things that they run and the habits they build are formed by the coaching staff in practice and in, like, things that we don't necessarily see. But I just don't think that the coach has a huge impact other than in the minutes distribution side of things, where I think we kind of agree that Kenny's, like, he's okay in that department. He tends to ride the hot hand, which I usually like. And, yeah, he's, like, willing to give minutes to guys if they've earned them, which we've seen. So I have no problems with Kenny as a coach. And yeah, it's what you said about Kyrie is a good point, because he's been way better than I thought he would be, and yet the Nets are 1-3. So it's tough to see him playing any better than he is right now, so that improvement has to come from everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just like, I agree with that. I mean, Kenny is someone that I think he oscillates between playing the hot hand and playing guys that he really trusts, which every coach does, and then also kind of being too slow to make adjustments in games. So, like, you see, you know, Dinwiddie, he goes one play, doesn't draw a foul call, a second, out of control. I mean, everyone knows he's going to keep doing it until he gets a foul call, and that's the kind of stuff that can really derail a team, and you have to recognize that early so he's not doing it in what will become go from a 4-point deficit to a 10-point deficit, especially in the fourth quarter. And that's the thing I know he likes to let guys play through it a lot of times, and I think, sure, that sounds great in theory, but especially with a lot of these personalities on the Nets, it's better to be proactive, especially when they're playing teams where they have the best player in this game, in all these games. I mean, maybe you can argue in game one that Karl Anthony Towns can go out and have a better game than Kyrie Irving, and that's certainly fair, but they've had the best player in each of these first four games, and they've gone out and just kind of haven't gotten it done, and whatever that's due to matchups, lineups, guys just not playing to their potential. It's just disappointing.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really interested to see what happens in that Houston game, because I think that can either be like a turning point for this team or like a potential like rock bottom if they get really blown out, because they won't have the best player in the game, and they might not even have the second best player if Russell Westbrook is really clicking. So that's going to be a real no, I'm just saying, like, in the same vein of what you said about Towns earlier, where like it's possible that he can outplay him for a game, not that he's better, but like he has the potential in a given game to be better.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the bonus might have outplayed him tonight, so I think I see what you're saying on that front. It's just like when you take this Nets team and kind of the expectations that they had in coming into the season, even though KD was out, and kind of the excitement we were able to experience in July, and that was magical, but I'd love to see things that result in wins. And let's not even kind of go into the Jackie McMullen report, just because I don't, anything that's talking about Kyrie Irving right now, Kyrie Irving is not the problem on this team. He's actually the only fun and good thing about this team. So I don't care about any kind of reported moon swings or everything. I think a lot of it's kind of that the media doesn't like Kyrie Irving, and he's obviously a very polarizing figure. So I don't even, until there's anything else that can kind of validate this, and a bunch of the Nets players have already come out and said, hey, this is not true whatsoever, in DeAndre Jordan and Spencer Dinwiddie, I don't even think we need to spend any time on it. And if Kyrie Irving's going out there and dropping 40 a night, then he can be as moody as he wants to.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say about that is, like, I'm a big Jackie McMullen fan. She's, like, one of my favorite writers. And if you, like, actually read that story, it's really, like, a small part of it that talks about this Kyrie thing. I think it kind of got blown up on Twitter by, like, other people who maybe have, like, agendas. I don't think it was, like, if any Nets fans think it was, like, her, because she's, like, a Boston person, like, trying to do some kind of smear thing. I think that was more just, like, the NBA Twitter community trying to start something that, frankly, I don't think is really there.
Yeah, people kind of just take that clip and then put it into their own article and then make it clickbait. And it's not fair to Jackie, who does an amazing job. All of her long-form pieces are really excellent. So she does an incredible job, and, you know, she's a highly credentialized reporter, very well-respected and very well-sourced. But, yeah, again, as you mentioned, very tiny piece of the overall article. So it's really not fair to criticize her, and not fair to make everything about Kyrie just kind of in that one snippet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, but hopefully better days are ahead for the Nets. I'm sure they will. You know, I just needed to vent. But, you know, if they can get back on track with a win against Houston, that would be that would go a long way. I mean, 1-4, obviously not the end of the world in an 82-game season, but we like winning. So hopefully the Nets can improve to 2-3 on Friday, and then that next day, Saturday, they have a back-to-back against Detroit, so they're flying out immediately. So that, you know, if it could easily be 1-6. I don't know how likely it is. I think the Nets will get at least one win there, but it's possible. So it's a pretty important stretch coming up, critical early season stuff ahead, and we'll have it all covered on Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review us. Marcus, my man, is on Twitter at Marcus Barahal. He is great. If you want to go see him perform his improv, Marcus. Can you tell him that your whereabouts?
I don't have any dates right now, but as soon as I do, I'll let the people know.
Oh yeah, maybe we'll tweet him out. At Twitter at Lockdown Nets. I am at jmbass underscore, but I basically tweet entirely at this point from the Lockdown Nets account. You'll see a lot of angry Nets tweets from me on there, but hopefully we'll be back in your ears soon with better news. Until next time, be well.
Bye.